Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Fightin' Words, the Fightin' Words Sports Network. Fightin' Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women police and fire services, the doctors, nurses, and first responders on the COVID side, and also those wonderful people at the supermarket that keep the food stock shelves during the pandemic, hurricanes, and all these tragedies that are going. They are definitely heroes. Tonight, we're glad to have one of our former staff members join us back, come back and join us. Armstead, welcome. We've been looking forward to this for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be back on. I definitely listen to the show when I get a chance, and I'm very honored to be back on. I'm glad I was able to get this worked out with my own schedule and rejoin the show.
Great. We're going to start the show on a sort of a sad note. One of our favorite contributors, Bernard Fernandez, as everyone knows, an author, was a fantastic sports writer for the Philadelphia Daily News for over 30 years. And then the before that, the New Orleans Picayune, his wife, Ann, has entered hospice. She has cancer and is not doing very well. And we send our very best wishes and thoughts and prayers out to the family, but especially to Bernard. He's been a tremendous help here on the show, and he's been a tremendous friend for all of us. So I know you're listening, and just know that we're with you, brother. All right, where should we start this thing? Tony, you had some very interesting comments this week on a certain fight coming up. Would you like to start?
Yes, I would, because I got a bunch of stuff I'd like to talk about. But so we talked Mike Tyson and Jake Paul. We'll start with that one.
Yep.
Started off as like going to be an exhibition, and there could be something behind the scenes we don't know. I don't know, but started off as an exhibition. Then there was some comments made on both sides, and evidently they went to draw up a contract in court. This is going to be a real fight, and it's actually going to take place on Mike Tyson's record, official record, win, lose, or draw. In the meantime, or in the midst of it all, Jake Paul made some comments about Mike Tyson's, I believe he had a deceased child of some sort. I'm not sure what happened, but which totally set Tyson off. And he was on Instagram and some other things just absolutely going berserk. And it looks very real to me, but who knows? If Jake Paul beats him, it's definitely fabricated. There's no way Mike Tyson will lose that fight.
Okay. Z?
Okay, from what I heard, first of all, I want to say hello, everybody. Good to have everybody here. From what I heard, if the fight is supposed to be an exhibition with boxing rules, with real boxing rules. I don't know what that exactly means, but that's from what I heard. Now, it is something going on in society now where people are calling each other out and they're saying bad, heinous things about people's family. I think that's fabricated. I think Jake Paul, I think that was pre-discussed with him and Tyson, and it's something to hype the fight up. And I think these guys are, you know, good friends. They're literally in the same business as far as the social media. They have the podcast. So they're literally just sort of in the same business. With that said, the fight is an exhibition. I can't imagine it being real. But for the sake of, you know, let's say for entertainment's sake, let's say it is real. Jake Paul is younger. He's taller. People say he may be faster, but I sort of debate that because the brain quickness, it usually beats hand speed any day of the week. So I'll put it like that. If it is real, I cannot pick Jake Paul for the simple fact that where I know Tyson's old and he's been out of the game for a long time, but there was a comment. I think one of you got, maybe Tony made it, to where Mike Tyson has forgotten more boxing than Jake Paul has learned. That is a heavy statement to be made. That is a heavy. Tyson, for a long part of his life, has trained to really hurt people. He has, he has the mentality before he got in the ring. Outside, from what I'm, understanding of him now, it's taken a lot for him to control that outside of the ring. Tyson has a natural mentality to fight, not to only fight to hurt. Mm-hmm. Jake Paul is an entertainer. Now, he has taken boxing sort of serious, but now, I look at his past opponents. So he had a very competitive fight with Nate Diaz, an older, smaller guy who's MMA, more MMA adept. He has boxing skills, but to be honest, Nate Diaz is more MMA adept. Jake Paul lost to Tommy Fury, who himself is a novice, to be honest.
Right.
To fight Mike Tyson, you are going up level. I don't care. Yes, he's this year, many years old. I'm not trying to hear that because you're talking about what a guy has done through the majority of his life. He's dealt with that sort of physicality. Mike Tyson has fought legends. Jake Paul's mm-hmm. best fight was Tommy Fury. To me, that kind of says it all there. Now, we could talk physical dimensions in this. That right there says it all.
Okay.
And Tyson's still physically capable. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. What's your thought, Armstead?
Well, I want to say this, too. We talk about this fight. We talk about who Mike Tyson is and, how he's been as a fighter. I don't know if you guys saw this video, but this is about maybe a year or so ago. George Foreman had a video of him hitting the heavy bag. George Foreman's like 76 right now, and he's hitting the heavy bag. And I would not want George Foreman to punch me now as a 76-year-old man. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Oh.
So I – in seeing that, I'm thinking of a 57-year-old Mike Tyson, who we've all seen train. The speed is mm-hmm. remarkable. The guy is an absolute tank. And if Jake Paul does win this fight, it's a total ruse. It's a total ruse. There's no way I'll accept the fact that he's going to legitimately beat someone of Mike Tyson's caliber, especially considering if you watch his training videos of Mike Tyson teaching other people his particular skill set and his moves, it's really no contest. Mike Tyson is also been very, very successful against much taller fighters. That's where he gets mm-hmm. – he's been very successful against taller fighters with the way he's able to peekaboo, the way he's able to squat and generate power from his legs. He just has to touch Jake Paul once. Jake Paul is a – I'll say this about him. He does – I think he does legitimately like boxing, and I think he does legitimately train for this sport, and I think he does have respect for it. But he's also, as we've talked about his previous opponents, he's fighting non-boxers. He's fighting guys mm-hmm. who train boxing as one of probably four or five different types of things they have to train for. And MMA boxing is totally different because you can't lead with your leg that way because you're just going to get kicked or you're going to get grabbed or you're going to get thrown on the ground. So even if you have an ADS who does have boxing skills, he can't box the same way as a boxer would. And I watched an ADS fight. I just couldn't get over seeing him wearing boots and long shorts. It looked really weird to me. That's Nate Diaz. I've seen Nate Diaz fight probably 20 MMA fights. It just didn't look right to me. So when you're seeing a guy like Mike Tyson in there who and the comments about the daughter, I don't know if you all saw this either, but Bernard Goldberg, when he was interviewing Mike Tyson, and Mike Tyson looked at him, after he was expressing his emotions and said, "You need to go." And Bernard Goldberg actually said that was one of the scariest moments of his life. So we all know who Mike Tyson is. We all know what Mike Tyson's capable of. And if Jake Paul wins this fight, then we all know, okay. Which is precisely the reason why I will not pay a dime for it. If I happen to be at a watering hole and it's on, yes, I will absolutely watch it. I will absolutely watch it. If I'm at home, I'm going to follow it on my phone because I'm curious about what's going to happen. But if at any point, if Mike Tyson punches Jake Paul legitimately and Jake Paul doesn't fall over, then you know he didn't hit him all that hard. That's my take on the whole thing. I just don't see it being possible.
I have Katie. One problem with what you were saying. I agree with a lot of things you were saying, but one of the things that I disagree with is I'll put money on it. Find me one of those training videos that's longer than a minute long with Mike Tyson where he's not taking breaks. You can't. You can't find a video of Mike Tyson training like an absolute beast for hell, longer than 30 seconds. That's why.
I was primarily talking about the videos of him training other people and his knowledge. That's what I was talking about.
But this is him, though. This is him, though. I mean, this is Mike Tyson.
He's not. I understand that. I'm not refuting that either.
Yeah. Kai, what's your thought?
I think people are looking at this fight as more of a landslide than they should, because this is still a young, aspiring boxer. I'm not going to say that he's the best or say that he's going to be one of Tyson's hardest fights. But I am looking at a guy who hasn't fought a real fight in damn near 20 years versus a guy who's been fighting for the last five. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I think just because of that, you could say, it's Mike Tyson, but and he still has that puncher's chance. But I don't see how an almost senior citizen can beat a boxer right now.
It's a fight shouldn't go more than about 30 seconds anyway, to be honest with you. If it's real, it's a 30-second fight. There's going to be one hit and it's over.
Let's get Ty his answer. Go ahead, Ty.
First of all, I hope everyone's well and having a blessed and peaceful week. As far as my thoughts on this fight, I was enjoying just listening to everyone else because when it comes to this fight, I have no thoughts that are worth my energy. This is where I stand on this fight. This is where I will stand on this fight. And that's the most I'm going to speak on it.
Okay. Caden, earlier in the week, you had asked me to find out what Bob thought. His thoughts are, I hate this guy. Is it an exhibition or a real fight? I love Iron Mike, but could be his most important fight and knockout ever. Now, this match should be up to Tyson's Punch-Out versus Glass Joe. I guess it's supposed to be Glass Jaw. Yeah, miss you guys. So that's Bob's thought.
This fight is sort of a lose-lose for Jake Paul to a point. Because if he beats Tyson, he'd be the guy who's, what, 50-something years old who hasn't fought for a while. If he loses to Tyson, he lost to a guy who's 50-something, hasn't fought in a while. So, I mean, really, this is daring by Jake Paul. It's lucrative, but just from a standpoint of, you know, this is daring. You know, I admire kids' heart.
Okay. All right. Let's go over to the other side. We got Sean O'Malley just had a pretty decent fight against Dovizioso. What's your thoughts on that one, Armstead?
Sean O'Malley versus Merab. I don't really know how to take this fight because I'll say this about Merab. Merab is basically kind of a hybrid fighter, same as of Aljamain Sterling, his training partner. But Merab gets touched. He does get hit. And I think if O'Malley is able to connect some good shots with him early, I think O'Malley is going to take this fight. And it's going to take a lot for Merab to close that distance and get to him and get him down. And we've seen O'Malley knows how to fight at distance, being, you know, 5'10", 5'11", fighting at 135. I mean, he's a tall guy, and he has good hands. I think O'Malley takes this fight. I think he takes it in a decision, but I just think he's just going to touch him too much. And as long as he can avoid Merab's his ground and pound and avoid Merab's submissions, I think he should be able to get through this. And I don't want to say easily because I never want to disrespect Merab like that, but I do think he wins this fight.
Okay, Caden.
I agree with you. I agree with you, but I feel like this fight is just going to be a fight of distance. If Sean O'Malley beat Merab at a good distance, then it's going to go O'Malley's way. But if Merab can find a way to get under those long arms and under those long limbs, then it's going to be Merab all day. You know, I love Merab. I forget what his last fight was.
Henry Cejudo.
That was crazy. That was
a crazy fight.
He was manhandling a UFC legend, and for him to do that, I just think it's definitely not a good idea for anybody, maybe even including Aljamain Sterling, to get his hands on Merab Dishavelli. Although that will never happen because they're like best buddies. But
absolutely,
I do feel this fight is going to be a longer one. But if Sean can get his hands, just get his hands going, keep it true with the 1-2s and good leg kicks in there, then I feel like it will be Sean's night. And I don't think it goes to decision. But again, if Merab can find a way to close that distance, it's Merab all day. And it's not going to be pretty.
Okay. What do you think?
I agree completely with what you just said. I agree completely.
Ty?
Now, here's a real fight. You can get my opinion on this one. In regards to this fight, I think Armstead and Caden both made valid points. It's particularly with Caden's point, it also spoke to Armstead's point, right? The Henry Cejudo fight, there were parts of that fight. You know, for a large swath of that fight, Merab looked quite dominant. But speaking to Armstead's point, he has a tendency to get touched up a little bit. And if you guys remember, Henry Cejudo rocked him with the left hook in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
As Armstead was saying, Sean O'Malley really has, and you know, people don't give this kid credit for the nuanced improvement he's made. He's become much better at his distance and range striking, at being able to move and plant his feet, pivot to find his shot. And I mean, he really laid a good shot and really should have been credited with a knockdown against Chito Vera in his last fight.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really improved at being able to use his physical attributes to really become, you know, quite the fighter. With that said, Merab is a dog. You got to give Merab credit. He's a dog, and he's the kind of guy who, if he can go ahead and grind on you and wear you down and drag you into deep waters, then maybe he can find a submission. But in accord with my brethren on this radio show, I got to go ahead and agree. I lean towards O'Malley. I don't believe that that Merab will be able to close the distance effectively, not without getting touched up and taking a beating or catching something that clips him. So I agree with the guys.
Okay. D?
I have to agree with them also. I like Sean O'Malley. He's light on his feet, entertaining to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of he's an entertaining guy to watch. I don't know too much about the other guy, but you know, right now I'm high on Sean O'Malley.
Okay, Tony, as a short turn stand in for our good friend Keith Thurman, it looks like Fondura did okay last week.
Phenomenal. I didn't expect it. That was a bloodbath, and that was one hell of a fight between both of them. I haven't seen that much blood in a long time. Fedora took the championship away from him and deserves every bit of it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Z?
First of all, that was one heck of a fight. I have to give credit to both fighters. They had to. It was a fight filled with adversity, I should say. With that said, Tim Tszyu, the cut obviously bothered Tim Tszyu. Not the pain of it, the location, because he kept getting blood in his eye. And as you saw, as he's trying to defend and get in, Fondura kept his hands going. Not necessarily putting power on everything, but he kept his hands going. He kept the blood in Tim Tszyu's eye. He didn't give Tim Tszyu a chance to really set and do his thing, because early in the fight, Tim Tszyu was doing a very good job of throwing the straight right to the body. Started getting that off, mm-hmm. and usually that you know, breaks the fighter down. In the second round, I believe he received the elbow and the cut, and he didn't get beat up during the fight, and it was a very competitive fight throughout by both men. With that said, I really think the cut made the difference, and it just the location. You know, when you have blood in your eyes, you know, who's ever been in the gym, you've had sweat in your eye before, and you know, but sweat in the blood and that location is going to scream into your eyes. And as you saw, you know, Fondura himself, you know, his nose looked broken to me. You see, he was bleeding profusely from his nose. So, you know, these guys, you know, it's hard to breathe when you're doing that. So, first of all, just the durability of both guys has to be commended. I think that, as I say, those things happened. It was an accidental elbow. It wasn't anything on purpose. And I think that, you know, the location and the blood in the eyes, it stopped Tim Tszyu from executing what he was doing. And he had to reset a bit more, which allowed Fondura to get his hands off a lot and keep, you know, keep him more defensive than he would have liked to be. So I you know, it was a close call fight, and I do agree with the decision for the most part. Yes.
Okay. Let me see here. Caden. UFC 300 got Alex Pereira versus Jamahal Hill.
Yes. And it's also, this is a birthday present from the UFC to me. Can you believe that? actually knew it was my birthday and decided to put UFC 300 on it.
Pretty wild. I'm very happy for you.
I know. I feel very happy for myself as well. But it's a crazy card. It's a really crazy card, and I feel like the main event is Jamal Hill versus Alex Pereira. This is a fight that I feel like more people are glossing over than they should. People are looking at this fight. They see Alex Pereira. They know Alex Pereira. They know what he can do. They know what he did against one of the best we've ever seen in the middleweight division. And then they look at Jamal Hill, and maybe they haven't seen Jamal Hill fight. Maybe they don't recognize his name as much, so they think that it's going to be a rollover, walkover fight for Alex. And even some real deal analysts are looking at this fight as a rollover fight for Alex Pereira. In my mind, there's no possible way where I can think of, unless he just goes out there and slumps Jamal Hill, but there's no way that there's no possible scenario I can come up in my mind where this fight ends in the first round. It just can't happen. Jamal Hill he's too good on the ground. People don't give him enough credit for that. And one thing people always overstep when it comes to Jamal Hill is that his hands. His hands are amazing for a grapple first fighter. I mean, we saw that fight against Glover Teixeira. He was damn near out wrestling and out jiu-jitsuing, if that's even a word. One of the best we've ever seen in the UFC. And I feel like saying this fight is 100% Alex Pereira's would be wrong of me to say. But that being said, I still think that Alex Pereira wins this fight. But we know how Alex Pereira likes to fight. He stands up. He's kind of like a statue out there. You can't really do that when you're fighting a guy like Jamal Hill, because he's going to exploit. When you go for that kick, you bet he's rushing you. You bet he's rushing you and going for that takedown. And we've seen Alex Pereira on the ground. Not very good. Not very amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I still think Pereira takes this. And if it goes past three rounds, it's going to be a decision win. If it doesn't, it's just going to be a TKO win.
Uh-huh. Okay, Armstead?
He said 90% of what I wanted to say. I could not agree more. I think that this fight is also getting overlooked, tragically. I think Jamal Hill is not really looked at in the same vein as Alex Pereira, and I don't agree with that either. I mean, I do think that his hands have absolute firecrackers in it. He can touch you and put you out in a minute. His grappling is strong. And I know also people see Jamal Hill, and he looks a little soft, He's a big guy. He walks around at 240. I mean, maybe even heavier than that. And about 6'4". He is. And also, his style. It seems like when you see him fight, it doesn't appear that he is as skilled as he actually is. And I think people can also overlook him because of that too. And I don't think this fight is getting really the energy it should. Happy birthday to you, my friend. I'm glad this is on your birthday. I'm definitely going to be. Looking forward to this scrap because this card is wild. But again, I also agree with you. I think Pereira should win this fight, but I can't. If you could give me gun to my head, I wouldn't be able to pick. To be honest with you, I think Pereira probably is going to win this fight. But yeah, it's Jamal Hill. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a fun one. I think this is going to be a fight that everyone should make sure you stay up for.
It's not even just that fight either. The whole card is insane. I've never seen a main event fighter start out the early prelims. Davidson Figueroa versus Cody Garbrandt is the first fight.
It's the first fight. That's going to be a fantastic fight.
Are they trying to kill Cody Garbrandt? Are they trying to kill this guy? Yeah, this man is one of the worst chins in UFC history. And they're going against one of the hardest hitting little men in UFC history? This just doesn't seem fair.
I mean, Cody's got some power too. That's the one thing. Cody's got some speed and pop. So he's always got a puncher's chance in every fight. However, Devinson's never been stopped, and he's also got some pop, right? So, yeah, it could be interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, Ty.
Well,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Devastation
has been stopped by the one time by Brandon Moreno. Please forgive me for
yeah.
that mistake.
But they fought four times. It was bound to happen at some
yeah.
point when you fight it got four times.
Yeah, yeah, all right.
yeah.
You could
hey,
do a whole
Ty,
show on this card,
this?
Like, and then I'll take you 2 hours just to do a show on this card. This card is nuts. It is absolutely nuts. I can't wait for it.
Ty, what did you think of the Raleigh Romero fight last week with Isaac Cruz?
You know what? The whole time I was watching that, I couldn't tell you what I was thinking because all I was thinking is, what is Tony thinking? That's all I could
think.
Yeah, boy. All I could think about is, man, Tony is enjoying this. Raleigh getting his comeuppance. And because he's a big and pretty tough guy, he's getting his comeuppance over consistently over 8 rounds as opposed to just one time. So it was exactly what I expected. Raleigh's best chance was to hold his feet and swing away. That was his best chance just because he's not skilled enough at this point to be able to deal with a pressure fighter like Cruz. And Raleigh had been talking about how he had been getting clipped because he was over-aggressive. So he was trying to fight behind his jab and you know, use his boxing skills and lateral movement, but he's not that guy. And there was nothing he was going to do to beat Cruz, but – you know, he did enough to keep Tony amused for 8 rounds or so. So it was, it went exactly how I thought it would go. But I literally was really honestly, I was like 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm watching this fight, laughing, screaming, Tony. Yeah, you know, I was like, Tony, wow. Because I knew he was just really enjoying it. So it was great.
Oh, absolutely. That wasn't even a fight. That was a little mini Mike, right? That's little mini Mike Tyson from Mexico right there. That guy is – that just made me believe even more he beat Tank Davis in the last fight just after seeing that. I mean, Raleigh didn't even stand a chance from the beginning.
Okay. All right, what's the next one, though? That's the problem.
Who is the next one that they're lined up?
No, what's left for Raleigh?
Oh, for Raleigh? He needs to bend over and grab his ankles and be glad he got a paycheck and go ahead and just retire. He's done.
Dang
that boy runs his mouth way too much.
That's where we're at. That's where we're at on this show. Wow.
Yep.
He brought out prison culture.
He's going to jail. Oh yeah, he's done. I get it, running your mouth and stuff to build up the fight, but man, when you build up a fight or you run your mouth just like he did and you get the chihuahua and all that crap and just get your ass beat, it's time to just go ahead and take your paycheck and go find something else to do, like, you know, maybe you can open up a flower store or something, you know.
Okay. Hey, Kate, I know you follow Blanchfield a lot. What do you think of her upcoming fight with Marion Fiorot?
I watched
that fight was last week. Yeah.
I think that fight was last week. More for him. I don't really know.
Yeah, I think Armstead was letting you know that fight was last week, and Blanchfield lost. Actually, she went in as a favorite, but she lost. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Go ahead. Oh, there you are.
You want me to jump in? Oh, I'll jump in.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, Sid.
Okay. I feel like Aaron Blanchfield, I think the problem with a lot of the women fighters is they don't have enough fighters. There's just not enough of them. And because of that, it's difficult to see lots of different presentations of style when it comes to MMA. And, you know, Erin Blanchfield, I think she'll hold a belt one day. I think she's very good, but when
she's young too.
She's really young. So, you know, I mean, 24, you know, the fact that she, and I don't feel like they fast tracked her either. I mean, she's had quite a few fights, and she just ran through everybody. But when she's fighting against somebody with the hands, Fiorot, who's fighting, you know, who's
right.
also fighting in a different continent, which has a different – the way they fight with hands is different. They have more of a kickboxing style and everything like that. She's a Muay Thai fighter. That's just not something Erin had seen before. And I think she just couldn't really – she didn't have a plan B. And when your plan A isn't working – and your plan B has no stylistic matchup to the other person's plan A, there's not much you can do other than just try and stay alive. And I think Blanche was just going to have to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, I saw something I've never seen before. How do I work with that and try to, you know, just add to her game? Because, yeah, she's so young. She's 24. I mean, Fiorot's 34. I mean, because for her, it's like, you know, if she was going to get her shot, she's got to take it now because, you know, she's only had 13 fights.
Right.
And she's already in her mid-30s.
Right.
So this is kind of her shot. So I think, I mean, I like the way Blanchfield handled the loss. I think she just needs to be like, all right, you know, I got to go back to the drawing board a bit. The UFC is not going to keep her on the shelf for long. They're going to put her back in there against someone that she will most likely be. And they're going to push. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if she's 26 years old and she's back right in there, you know, prepping to fight for the title. So I think this is just a bump in the road for her. But good on Fiorot. She's got some hands on her. She can scrap. And
yeah, she does.
And flyweight is looking like to be – it's flyweight slowly becoming the premier women's division because we all see what's happening at bantamweight. I mean, that is just like, why bother tuning in for any of those fights? So, I mean, so I'm happy for her, and I'm hoping that this actually regenerates what's going on with the women's game because I feel like it's taken a hit lately, and I really am supportive of these fighters. I want them to get in there and get as many fights as they can.
Okay.
Hey, Z, what do you think we got Robert Garcia coming up with Earl Spence. What's your thoughts?
Last thing I heard from Earl Spence was that he I guess wanted to take time off. You know, he didn't want the Crawford fight. It's something about the negotiations,
right.
But that was off the table.
Right.
I know he was Robert Garcia before. They're fighting again. I think what he's referring to is Errol Spence is apparently leaving Derek James, and there's talk that he could be training with Robert Garcia.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Errol Spence, style-wise, it might not be that bad because really, Garcia, he's a guy who's going to, you know, he's good at getting, you know, aggressive fighters to me. Good at guys to get in on the inside with the hands, though, which kind of Errol Spence is to a point. You know, he has his bread and butter's that. Errol Spence is not going to change much at all anyway. He's been in the game too long to change things. We have to see how it works. I mean, we have to see how it works. You know, simple as that. Errol Spence is a naturally physically gifted guy, and you know he's a gifted guy who knows what to do in the ring. And the only problem he had was his last fight against Crawford, a guy who could read what he was doing in the ring. And anytime a guy can read what you're doing, he has the advantage automatically. But you know, Earl Spence is a guy to where, you know, he's before Crawford he was unbeatable. So, you know, I don't like it, but, you know, I guess that's the way it is. Often guys, they have success with one trainer, and after a loss, they think it's, you know, they sacrifice their trainer who got them there. And I tend not to believe that. No, I tend to believe in, you know, things happen. You don't win every game. You can't, sometimes the guy is better than you. And that's not your trainer's fault. So, you know, I can understand, you know, the move he made, you know, not to say I like it, you know, but it's not going to hurt you to me.
Right. Hey, I guess I want to ask both Ty and Vito on this one because you do the boxing instructors. You got David Benavides moving to 175. Can he compete? Is he fast enough to stay there?
I think, you know what, he could, against certain people, yes. I think he's outgrown 168 anyway. The only reason he would stick around in 168 is to fight Canelo. He's more or less cleaned out the division. It's not, you know, I hate to say a division thing because you still have fighters there, but it's not the most, you know, it's top light, you know, the super middleweight, the top light. He's going into a division where you have Beterbiev and Bivol. The good news for him is that they're getting older. They're getting older. They're not going to be around forever. The bad news for him is that he has a name, and he's going to end up playing one of those guys probably sooner than he should. And that is where that big weight size and his style could be a detriment to him. It could be a detriment because now all of a sudden these guys aren't going anywhere when you hit them. These guys are also offering resistance. And then you talk about Bivol and Beterbiev, talking about very, very established amateur pedigrees and they transfer that to a very successful professional career at that weight. So it's not like these guys have moved up or anything. These guys have been established dominators at that weight for a while. I can't see, you know, Benavidez coming up and beating either one of these guys, not at the moment. Now, they're older, they're getting older, and we'll see in the future. But as of now, he can have success as long as he doesn't fight, you know, some of the top guys there.
Okay. Caden, what do you think about a rematch between Sean Strickland and Duplessis?
I think it's inevitable. I think it's one of those fights that has to happen for the growth of that division. But honestly, if we're talking about middleweight, so that's a big fight, but that's still a what if. I want to talk about a guarantee, which is Khamzat Chimaev versus Robert Whittaker. Now, everybody knows on the show for the past 3 years, you know, that he's my boy, that Khamzat Chimaev is my boy, and I ride with him through thick and thin. Some people say that Usman fight should have been a tie. I tell them, I don't care. Usman is, Khamzat Chimaev is, in my opinion, he's the future of the middleweight division. I thought he was the future. I thought he was gonna be the future of the welterweight division, but it seems like he's gonna stay in the middleweight division, which I think would be more healthy for him in the long run. Mm-hmm. Just due to his size.
Agreed.
He's like 6'1". 6'2", something like that.
I think he's 6'2".
And that's just 6'2", 175, doing that, you know, couple times a year is just, that's, for the long run, that's detrimental on your health. So I see that being unrealistic, his future being unrealistic in the welterweight division. But this fight against Rob Whittaker, Rob's a dangerous guy. We've seen Rob go in there and tussle with the best of them and look good. You know, those fights against Izzy, he's the closest, in my opinion, except for Kelvin Gastelum, he's the closest to beating Adesanya. I mean, if you, like, throw out Strickland and Pereira, he was the closest to beating Adesanya, which at the time seemed impossible. He was, like, the final boss of the video game, so you can't throw that out. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, Khamzat Chimaev is the most dangerous first round fighter we've seen in UFC history, and that's what I think it'll be. I think he's going to go out there, hopefully get that 10-8 for that first round, and hold on for dear life for the rest of it. And it's either he wins in decision or he just mauls him in the first round and wins by TKO.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Pump said there's talk now that Sergey Pavlyuk is coming back in June 22nd. Nobody's been TBA. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I won't lie. I completely misread the Sergey the Aspinall fight. I did not think it would go any way that it did. No disrespect to Aspinall. I just thought it was going to be a much longer fight with a little bit more intrigue, and it just wasn't. I was like, okay. So clearly I am completely wrong about this one. I think he was wise to step away for a little bit and regroup, because I think he also probably was a bit surprised by how that fight ended up, because I thought he would be better prepared for it. But, I mean – I do. I mean, so, you know, I think a fight with Alexander Volkov is good. I kind of feel bad for Volkov because I felt like ever since the Derek Lewis fight, he's kind of the guy where you're trying to see if you're going to be a top-level mm-hmm. fighter or not. You have to go against Volkov. And so I'm hoping that this is actually just a good, even fight and that because I kind of like both of them. I do. I like for a division that can be kind of boring. I do like watching both of these guys fight. So we'll see how that goes out. I personally think that I think Volkov will take it simply because he's on a bit better of a streak lately. And I think just seeing how much Pavlovich got touched the last fight, I think with Volkov's range, I mean, Volkov is 6'7". He should beat him, but I'll say if he doesn't, I won't be surprised either because Sergey's got power, probably second to Derek Lewis in that division. So, you know, but good for him to come back. I'm looking forward to seeing him come back. I'm happy for him.
I disagree with one thing that you said. You said Volkov should win this fight. I don't know. Just because Volkov, like you said, Volkov has been thrown to the dogs mm-hmm. time and time again throughout his entire UFC
mm-hmm.
career.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem very fair. Now, we are seeing a guy who just came off getting pieced up by Tom Aspinall. But even before that fight, I've always been preaching that Tom Aspinall. I've been on that Tom Aspinall train. Even before that Curtis Blaydes fight that absolutely broke my heart. But he bounced back. He bounced back in a big way. Now he's UFC champ. We all know that Tom Aspinall is beating John Jones. I'm gonna glaze past that so nobody disagrees with me. But
also John Jones just got in trouble again today, so we'll see if he even fights again.
That's true.
He got
that
in trouble.
True.
Yeah. He got in trouble.
I didn't read any call. I've been working all day.
John Jones,
what did he do?
John Jones snapped mm-hmm. at the new drug testing agent. She came to get an example. He was rude, and apparently he was intoxicated. And because he's a full fledged alcoholic, and said that people who show up at his house unannounced turn up dead or something like that. She filed a police report.
Oh,
it's a whole problem. Just check Reddit, you'll see it's all over the place.
the weird,
but
thing,
I'm sorry.
The weird thing
well,
about
I mean,
on,
let's be honest.
Sorry, I didn't hear you finish your point about Aspinall. Hold on, I want to hear you finish your point about Aspinall in that fight because. As you heard, I'm sure you can tell from my tone when I said he should win, I wasn't entirely convincing of myself anyway, so I'm sorry.
True. I'm just saying that Volkov's getting slumped.
Damn.
He's getting put to sleep. But if we're talking about, I want to make some bold claims right here, right quick for a second. Tom Aspinall is the baddest man on the planet, okay? I remember saying this. A little bit, even before that Pavlovich fight, I said he's going to be champion, and he's going to fight John Jones, and he's going to whoop him. Now, that is seeming unlikely, not for the fact that he's going to whoop him, but for the fact that if they fight at all, even with John Jones not being in trouble, I still think that fight happens. John's going to fight who he wants to fight, and he's earned that privilege. But it's infuriating because I love John Jones, and that's the biggest thing that I hate about John Jones is his inactivity, and
mm-hmm.
he's mostly self-inflicted. He's almost always self-inflicted when it comes to John
mm-hmm.
Jones' inactivity. Either he doesn't want to fight, or he does something stupid where he can't fight, and even
mm-hmm.
then he's like, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. But I think Aspinall is the baddest man on the planet. And I think if Pavlovich and Volkov fight, it's going to be a one-round fight, and we know that Volkov isn't a one-round fighter. He's a guy who likes to, you know, cruise through the fight. And
yeah, he's a kickboxer.
A one-round fighter. But that's my 2 cents on that.
John Jones is a guy. He has no losses on his record yet. He's a guy who has losses. He's a guy. He's undefeated in the fight, but outside the fight, he takes losses. You know, self-inflicted losses, as you mentioned. And I just don't understand that part.
His biggest fight is against himself. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one fighter that he can't beat is himself.
Exactly.
Oh, he's losing to himself.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he said, he's like, why are you here this early and it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Like, that doesn't matter. It's 4 p.m., dude. 4 p.m. on a Saturday, man. You should be chilling by now, man.
That was
wild. Real.
You're this late at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. That's what I saw.
Wow.
That's what the report was. The report was that she showed up at 4 o'clock.
Oh, man.
I said 4 o'clock. I was like, 4 a.m., and it was like, nope, 4 p.m. I was like, oh, jeez. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I read. Because I've seen every John Jones fight, and it's just sad. It's just really. I mean, there's nothing more you can say about it. Really, it's just sad. He wants to fight Stipe so bad, but I don't know if you guys saw Stipe at the last fight. He looked like he barely walked. So I'm like, okay, you can fight Stipe if you want, but it's really not. It's not good. It's not good for him.
Hey Ty, what do you think of the Tyson Fury fight coming up with Alexander, what the hell is his name?
Usyk.
Alexander Usyk. We know that is my guy. That is my favorite boxer in the game today. With that said, I've said it before, a healthy and dialed-in Tyson Fury, I think, is just a little too big and a little too slick for Usyk. Usyk's a gamer. He's a guy who just doesn't know how to lose. Tyson Fury's undefeated, but I feel a little differently about Usyk. I feel that Tyson Fury has some physical attributes, right, that no one has ever really dealt with. And, you know, make no mistake, he's a tremendous, marvelous boxer when he's dialed in. However, a big part of you know, his efficiency and his effectiveness is the physical attributes he's gifted with. Usyk, to me, is just a gamer. He's just one of those guys who you see, and he's kind of in a dogfight. And then, for whatever reason, at that time, he just finds that next gear, that next level. I truly feel there's something special about Usyk as a fighter. That's why, you know, I like him so much. Plus, he's such a goofball outside the ring. I always appreciate goofiness. But with that said, again, I think Tyson Fury is a little too big. And he's a little too diverse in his attack. You know, he can try to fight at range. I don't think he'll be as successful at range because I do believe he is slowing down a little bit. I do believe his reflexes aren't quite what they are. And I believe that Usyk is a little too quick and a little too active with his angles at range for Tyson Fury consistently, even though Tyson Fury will have success. But I do believe that Fury will change the game plan and go ahead. And it'll be, you know, similar to Stevie Cunningham, where he'll start to lean on him and wear on him. I don't think he's going to stop Usyk by any means, but I do think, you know, we forget about fights because we get into the narrative of power, you know, versus speed. But what we forget about fights is really it comes down to, you know, who can win the most rounds. And I just feel with Tyson Fury's length and his size, he can win 7 rounds before Usyk. Unfortunately, that's what I mean.
Z?
I like Ty's assessment. I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I think this fight comes down to who can do what they do more. Who can employ what they do more? Who can be more consistent at what's successful for them? And at this stage of Tyson Fury's career, he puts that 6'9", 275-pound frame on you. That is, you know, that's been successful to him during this part of his career. After the first Deontay Wilder fight, we don't have the same Tyson Fury. We don't have that outside, right on the toes guy. You know, he tried that with Ngannou, playing around, you know, acting like that was a sparring session. But really, we do not have that Tyson Fury when it comes down to him, to me, being serious. Tyson Fury is trying to get at you, trying to use his range so he can, you know, cut the distance. He's used his range to cut the distance. And how are you going to keep a 6'9 guy off of you? Well, with an Alexander Usyk. One thing Usyk is a master of, is footwork. And I don't care how big you are, you're going to have to use your feet to get there. Usyk is adept at moving laterally. He's extremely adept. And a guy who moves laterally like that is hard to cut off. Is extremely hard to cut off. Tyson Fury, at this stage, he's a little easier to hit. When he's not controlling the fight, his weight, with the size and weight, he's a little easier to hit. Ty alluded to the Stevie Cunningham fight. Stevie Cunningham was pretty much outboxing Tyson Fury, knocked him down until Tyson Fury adapted and changed it up. With a guy like Usyk, who's more or less expecting Tyson Fury to lay his size and weight on him, he's not going to be there. He's not going to be there. It's hard to cut off the ring from a guy like that. Tyson Fury has educated feet, but they're slower than Usyk's also. Usyk has a speed advantage with the feet. Not too much worried about the hands, because Tyson Fury does have tricky hands. But Tyson Fury also is not, he's heavy-handed, but he's not the hardest hitting heavyweight. I would say that Anthony Joshua hits a clip harder than Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury is just heavy-handed, and he tends to get there a lot with more or less everything. I just think that Usyk, his footwork and his conditioning, is going to be too much for Tyson Fury to win all of them. I think Tyson may win some early rounds, but later rounds, I don't see Tyson Fury gaining a head of steam enough to even deal with Usyk like that, especially in the later rounds with Usyk's conditioning and his movement doesn't really fade away during time. So I honestly have to give this the nod to Alexander Usyk. I think he's going to, the later rounds are his.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Katie?
Damn, brother, I hope you're right.
For Usyk? So I was zoning out.
No, okay. I'm dead.
Huh?
Dead?
I wouldn't know what to add about that. I can honestly say I haven't seen much of a Usyk or Fury box in the last couple of years. Of course, I am going to tune in for this one, as coming back to this show is going to, of course, rekindle my viewership of boxing. But, I'm looking forward to the fight. That's all I can really add.
Oh, this is about Usyk versus Fury?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, honestly, just because of what happened between Ngannou and Fury, and Fury, I'm not slighting his box. I'm not slighting Ngannou's boxing, but like Armstrong said earlier on, he has UFC boxing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You were looking at Alexander Usyk, who last couple of years has been an absolute world beater. Now I don't know, is this fight confirmed?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be May 18th, I believe. Yeah.
I'm not even gonna lie, after that Ngannou fight, I didn't even think that Fury was gonna step in the ring again. I thought he was done. But
he did show up kinda like that. He did do that. He showed up that way.
I feel like you can't really go out that way. If you're Fury won that fight, in my opinion he lost that fight. But if he's calling it that close with Francis Ngannou, and then you have a guy like Alexander Usyk who damn near ran through Anthony Joshua, and we saw what Joshua did to Ngannou. And I hate doing that comparing thing where, if this guy beats that guy and the guy who beat that guy
combat
better than that guy. I hate doing that. But for the sake of this argument, I'm going to use that, and I'm going to say that if this is actually gonna happen, then Usyk wins, and Usyk wins handily.
Okay. Well, guys, we're right at the end of our show. I want to thank everybody for being well prepared, and it's been a great show. And I want to thank everybody for being here. Armstead, you want to lead us out?
Thanks for having me back. I look forward to coming back on next week. Good talking to you guys. Heard some familiar voices again. I know I've been gone for a while, but thanks. Thanks for having me.
Great. Caden?
I'm set, man. I don't think I've been on with you with the
past 3 years that I've been on this show. I don't think I've been on with
you. Yeah, it's been a pleasure with you. Yeah, absolutely agree. I look forward to talking to you again.
Hell yeah. But again, everyone did a great job. Ty, Zito, thank you for always locking in on the boxing. It feels good to have a new MMA partner. But yeah, it was one of the best shows in recent memory. And hope everyone has a blessed night and even more blessed week. Keep on fighting, and I love y'all. See y'all next time.
Hey, Ty.
Hey, it was a pleasure being on with you guys again. Unfortunately, I don't get quite as much time to be on as I used to, but it was great hearing from everyone. I hope everyone has a great week. Bob is our co-pilot. Coach Mel is watching over us. Dr. Chris keeps us laughing. Everyone be well.
Z?
Another wonderful show. Good to have you back, Armstead. I want to thank Armstead. I want to thank Tony, Caden, Ty, Butch, all of my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely a memory of Bob, Coach Mel, and Dr. Chris. Anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call.
Hey, just as everybody I know, I talked to Elaine Panarello, Dr. Chris's wife, earlier in the week, and she's going in for a hip operation. So I ask all our listeners and fans, and especially our staff, to just keep a good thought for Elaine. She's not a young lady, and she's worried that she's about going under the knife. So if you could keep a good thought, that'll be great. And if you have the tendency to say a prayer, please do. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week. In grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of the Police and Fire Services, the doctors, nurses, and first responders in the hospitals, and especially the wonderful people in the markets that keep our food stock shelves. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis. Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap. Yeah, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwich. Sergeant Thomas Fager. San Diego Officer Mike Handler. Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers. Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department. Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department. Sergeant Chris LeBake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department. Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police. Patrolman Anofa Chrisman, Lakeland PD. Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department. Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department. Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Artith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department. Chief Al Hogel, Longboat Key Police Department. Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol. Trooper Zachary Ben, Florida Highway Patrol. Sergeant Christopher Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Police Department. Temple University's Police Department. And Sergeant Ramon Mendez, Philadelphia Airport Police and Philadelphia Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the hallow of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great week.
Shemarek ma yilama, shemahezahil ma, sona shenevorat fet hakuig again ma yilama. Again.
County Dispatch calling 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999's response to his last emergency. May God rest his soul and all the souls of the faithful departed. Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.